I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Tomorrow is the day US President-elect Donald Trump was meant to be sentenced to jail for up to 4 years over so-called hush money payments. But is outgoing President Biden the real criminal who should be in jail after he violated the will of the American people by trying to start an all-out NATO nuclear war with Russia? As Trump continues making cabinet picks that voters hope will end all wars as promised, some think the end of the world may happen before he makes it to the White House in time. Already, Russian TV is envisaging the wiping out of British cities, and Germany and newest NATO member Sweden have issued nuclear war guidance to its citizens. Joining me again from New York is the official who was Donald Trump's White House communications director in the last administration, Anthony Scaramucci. He's also the author of the best-selling book, From Wall Street to the White House and Back, The Scaramucci Guide to Unbreakable Resilience, and founder of the global investment firm Skybridge Capital. Tony, thanks so much for coming back on. Before we go to crypto, cabinet picks, war and peace, Caroline Leavitt, he's appointed the youngest ever assistant press secretary, who would have been in your old department at communications. Any advice, apart from reading your book, no doubt?
Well, I mean, look, the problem is, you know, he's going to want her to lie for him. And, you know, that job does require some lying, no matter what president you're running with or being a part of. I mean, it's just, unfortunately, that's a tough spot to be in. But I would say to her, she's 27 years old, try to keep the lying to a minimum if you can, you know, and don't get pushed into something like, you know, he really hurt Spicer when he told Spicer to go out and say that my crowd sizes were bigger than Obama's when empirically they were not. And so I would just tell her, try to keep the lying to a minimum, but good luck.
Yeah. A lot of lies over the Biden-Harris administration, obviously. I mean, you've said you didn't want...
You run for public office, you lie. And if you stand at that podium, you know, I only had one press conference from the White House, and I think I distinguished myself by not lying, but it also cost me because when I left the podium, there were three or four Republican operatives that said to me, hey, what the hell's wrong with you? You can't talk like that from the White House. You got to be more oblique and you got to be more obfuscating. And of course, I'm a Wall Streeter, so I'm not really designed like that. And then 11 days later, I get fired.
That's if people didn't know who were watching. I mean, you didn't want Trump elected. There is genocide in this region, so lots of people have ideas about at least the wars may have a chance of ending. But you personally benefit from Trump's incorporation of crypto, perhaps, into the economy. How excited are you that finally we have a president who's certainly the people around him embrace the new technology that certainly here in Dubai and most of the rest of the world has been using for years?
Listen, I made my points of concern well known about the president and what the risks were of having him return to the presidency. The American people have spoken. We live still in a democracy, and hopefully that will continue. And I respect the electoral success that he's had. He won the popular vote as well as the Electoral College. I've offered my congratulations to him and Elon Musk, who I think they ran a very well-executed campaign, wasn't in love with a lot of the things that were being said. I mean, when he says he's going to use the American military to go after his political adversaries, I mean, that's very un-American. So hopefully he's not going to do that. We'll have to see what he does. But as it relates to the cryptocurrency space, I tried to tell the Democrats, you're going to get annihilated for this position. They didn't listen. There's a PAC, a political action committee in the United States called Fair Shake. They deployed $250 million into these races. I don't know if this is too inside baseball, but Sherrod Brown, who was the head of the Senate Banking Committee, very important, influential senator from Ohio, 18 years in the Senate, he got ousted primarily because the crypto community put $40 million into his opponent's campaign. So, you know, Democrats didn't listen. Mr. Trump, you like him or dislike him, President Trump, he's got great political instincts. And so I like the fact that he's pro-crypto. There are things about his policies that I do like, but I don't like the rhetoric. I don't like the dehumanization talk. He talks about non-white immigrants to the country the way the National Socialists talked about the Jews in the 1930s. I don't think that dehumanizing is
I actually wanted to get onto crypto a bit more before we went into that. But as you know, massive strides into the Latino community, the African-American community. These minorities were the people that voted for Trump. Michigan, clearly, Arab-Americans, they don't share your view.
He gained ground in those areas, but he doesn't have the plurality in those areas. He gained ground in those areas. But what's interesting about everybody in life, when the exit polling, the Latino community said, oh, they're talking about the other Latins. They're not talking about me. And this is a very big danger in life. You know, when it's an us versus them, it's a very big danger. If you're talking in a dehumanizing way about one group, the dominoes start to topple into the other groups. It's not necessary. A country like this, a prosperous, free country, well, this level of economic activity in the country and the check and balance system and the plurality of the country, it's not necessary to talk like that. So, yeah, you're right. He gained ground. And the big mistake a lot of people make, it's us versus them. He's talking about them. He's not talking about me. But you know what? When he's talking about them, it could eventually hit you.
You know, it's difficult when you're in the rest of the world looking on because you see what Biden and Harris did as regards the war in Western Europe, the refusal to have negotiations, the pumping of billions of dollars of American public money into that war in Europe, into Israel to commit It's difficult to see the connection.
Who started that war? Hold on a second. I know because I love you.
Well, Trump says he's going to end it, right? Trump says he wants to.
But who started the war?
Well, many people believe it was the 2014 coup, but let's not go right back to that. Right now, where we're at is where we need negotiation. That's the view of the American people, presumably.
I'm in agreement with that. I would like that war to end. I think that there's a, unfortunately, with war, you get countless unspeakable civilian casualties. I mean, even the military casualties are also tragic and unspeakable. So I'm all about figuring out a way to end that war. You know, I have a lot of Russian friends and a lot of Russian clients. This is not an anti-Russian statement, but, you know, I think there are people in Europe that are concerned about Russian aggression. I mean, let me just pose this to you. Finland and Sweden, 74 years, not in NATO. Excuse me, guys, you need to be in NATO? They say, no, we don't need to be in NATO. In the 75th year, Finland and Sweden enter NATO. So, and by the way, Finland borders the Russian border. The Russian government didn't really have a problem with that.
They wouldn't be issuing guidance for nuclear war if they hadn't joined NATO, arguably. But actually, on Ukraine, I can actually tie this up with the crypto. Did you believe?
Hold on. I know it's your show, but we're going to nuclear war now. So you're telling me that they should be nuclearly threatened by the Russians?
No. Sweden, in the past few days, has issued new nuclear guidance to all of its citizens, presumably because it's a member of NATO.
Feel threatened.
After Vladimir Putin changed the nuclear doctrine in Russia.
The Russians are going to drop the new gun. So you're telling me that the Russians are going to go from a Eastern European theater war to a nuclear war with the Europeans? Is that what you're telling me?
I think it's been made completely clear from Moscow that if a non-nuclear state, Ukraine, uses weapons, conventional weapons, that are satellite controlled or based from another nation that has nuclear weapons, that's what the Russians now say. Basically, we're on an escalatory ladder in the dying days of the Biden administration.
That will not end well for anybody. That won't end well for the Europeans, the Americans, the Russians. And so I'm hoping one of the reasons why we haven't deployed nuclear weapons since the Second World War is that there are some sane people at the table on both sides that will bridge a compromise. And again,
well, it's up to Vladimir Putin and the Duma in Moscow.
When a war ends, a good treaty is everyone's a little
under Biden-Harris, right? Under Biden-Harris, it is now, the United States has given complete sovereignty over all our futures to Vladimir Putin and the Duma. They can decide to attack now under their revised nuclear doctrine. I mean, these are the dying days of Biden-Harris.
I love you, but your syllogisms are not logically congruent. Okay, so, and I appreciate, but what you're saying is not true. They could have They could have attacked under Reagan. They could have attacked under Kennedy. They
I'm just saying under
Clinton.
Putin has changed the nuclear doctrine.
We had a security agreement that was established in 1994. The Russians had no problem with it. We had a security agreement with the Ukrainians. There were territorial borders that were accepted by the Russians and the UN. They crossed that territorial border. And so you're saying that the Europeans that had the security agreement with the Ukrainians and the Americans that had the security agreement shouldn't have operated and executed the security agreement. So
you know what? This war is going to come. I don't want to over-litigate you know that Angela Merkel.
I want the war to end.
Angela Merkel said the Minsk process was a lie.
I want the war to end. I love the Russian people, but I'm not. We don't can't talk nonsense. We got to talk clarity. Okay, so I want the war to end. I want the integrity of these borders to be internationally acknowledged. And I think Trump's going to surprise people, by the way, on this issue. So I don't think, you know, if he has a good relationship with President Putin, I don't necessarily think he's going to roll for President Putin. If anything, if I were in that situation, I would tell President Putin, you can't make me look bad. Let's have the war end with some type of demilitarized zone, some type of buffer zone, some type of safety for everybody. But let's have this thing end so that the violence... You know, you're talking about dropping a nuclear bomb in Finland? I mean, come on, guys, we can't do that.
Actually, it'd be more like
nonsensical.
Britain or France under the nuclear
doctrine.
Okay,
so even if it's...
Actually, just speaking to that, because you've spoken to some...
Britain, come on, it's not that's not going to end well for anybody.
Clearly not. Clearly not. I'm not saying that's what anyone wants. You are speaking to some of these people in the Trump administration. Waltz said, his national security advisor said taking the handcuffs off the long-range weapons we provided Ukraine. Apparently, lots of these picks, backing up what you said about Trump, far from being a peacemaker and wanting to go down the de-escalatory ladder.
Rubio.
Yeah, and Rubio. I mean, are they going to follow Trump's orders, or are they still on the side of the military-industrial complex wanting this war to go up the escalatory ladder?
How do you know what Trump's order? See, you know, how do you know what Trump's orders are? You know, Trump is picking these people for a reason. You know, he may be signaling to people that we're going to get to a peace, but the Russians may not be overly satisfied with the peace. The Ukrainians may not be overly satisfied with the peace, but we need to get to a peace. You know, one of the things that the founders of the United States said about compromise is that both sides would not like it, okay? But they set the system up to force
a compromise.
Hang on,
Tony, you're talking exactly like Donald Trump right now. That's exactly what Trump
is.
Yeah, that's what Trump's been saying as this war has been getting worse and worse, and hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians have been killed. Surely.
You be the Secretary of State and the President of the United States. What would you like to see?
Rubio or Lincoln?
Let Putin take the Ukraine? Is that what
you
say?
No, I think...
They had 300 years of conquest over the Ukrainian soil, and it restored its sovereignty in 1991.
Okay, hang on, Tony. I'll stop you there. More from the former White House Communications Director after the break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with former White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci. Tony, I know you're in the middle of, you know, we're talking about the Ukraine war from the beginning. I didn't really want to get back into that because hopefully we can see an end to it if Biden...
I'd love to see an end to the war. Like I said, I love the Russian people. I love their culture. I would like the both sides to put down their arms. Obviously, you know, it'd be better for the world.
Well, then on these Trump picks, you know, he was strong enough to resist John Bolton, who's been on this show, the hawkish national security advisor who lasted a bit of time and was from his memoirs, was always trying to get Trump to do weird things. He used Bolton as nut jobs, didn't he? That's what Trump says. He brought them into rooms and used them. Will he similarly be using some of these people who other people might think are nut jobs, Marco Rubio and others, very different to the policies of RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and so on.
Now we're getting to really good questions. Okay, so that I actually agree with. So I think there's a rotisserie that happens in Trump world. You come in on the conveyor belt, they hand you a MAGA hat, you're waving to the crowd. And as you go by Trump, he shivs you in the back. And there's been a legion of people that he's done that to. And so what Trump is masterful at is he always figures out a way to bring more people into the mix, whether it's Elon Musk, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr. And so the real question is, are they going to have a different experience than John Bolton, Mark Milley, Mark Esper, and John Kelly? That's the real question. And so I would submit back to you that the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome. So I think we're gonna see a lot of that in the second Trump administration, and I think it'll be unfortunate. Look, I mean, I would like the organization of that administration and the effectuation of policy to lead to great peace, great global prosperity. But, you know, he's casting that administration. You know, he's putting people that are former television hosts, television stars into the administration. Are they the best qualified people? I don't know. He's entitled to do whatever he wants. And of course, the Senate has to approve it. But, you know, I mean, it's going to be difficult. You know that. It'll be difficult.
But the point I was trying to make was that, is he actually, when everyone says he's a weak character, he's actually a strong character who brings these people in with different positions. So when he's negotiating, the opponent doesn't really know where he's coming from.
I don't see it that way, actually. You know, I think the president has great communication skills. He's a great campaigner. He has great political instincts. But one of his deficits is in executive management. He's not a great executive manager. He ran a great television show, but he has never been known to put an organization together, create a culture, delegate things to people. It's really been a one-man show. And so what ends up happening to these people, if they take any sorts of credit or they get into the spotlight in any sort of way, he hits them with a ray gun. So, you know, he put a lot of cabinet members against each other last time, and they were all afraid to do something that he didn't like. They were afraid he was going to out them and embarrass them with a presidential tweet. And so you have to tell me how any of that has changed. You know, I don't see the 4D chess that other people are talking about. I don't see it.
And Tulsi Gabbard's job as Director of National Intelligence, I mean, it's clear that the deep state, or maybe it's just the state, don't like Trump. And with respect to your position at SkyBridge Capital, do you believe the markets are being rigged a little ahead of Trump's inauguration? Very dangerous right now for leveraged trades. I know that you knew Sam Bankman-Fried. Some people said that was to do with Ukraine. And certainly there was a lot of talk about crypto laundering for Ukraine beforehand. What should people expect ahead of Inauguration Day as regards sudden dips and sudden rises in crypto?
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so I don't accept that stuff that you're saying. You don't even, there's no evidence of any of that. But what I would say to you is that the market perceives that Donald Trump is not going to do what he says. So when Donald Trump says he's going to put 600% tariffs on certain industries, the market says he's not going to do that. When Donald Trump says he's going to use the American military to go after his political adversaries, the market says, no, he's not going to do that. When Donald Trump says he's going to deploy the military to deport 15 million people from the United States, which would hurt the GDP, probably push us into a recession, lower our tax revenues, lower the contributions to the Social Security Trust, the market says he's not going to do that. So what the market's saying is that Trump is going to run the government like a moderate centrist Republican, and he's going to offer some levels of deregulation and regulatory reform for places like banking and crypto, and that's going to be generally good for the market. And because he has the House and the Senate, he might be able to extend his tax cuts, which were set to expire, or he may be able to get an additional corporate tax cut from 21 to 15%. So you know, Trump is saying one thing, but the way the market is acting is that they believe he's going to operate and govern in a different way than he's saying.
And why were conservative voices on Wall Street so against crypto in the first place? I mean, when you at SkyBridge Capital were investing in crypto, people didn't believe you. What was going on behind the scenes, the pressures that he'll face, the Trump administration will face, when the SEC begins to allow crypto trading and the United States to be a factor here?
So that's a really good question. I think that when you're in a highly regulated industry, which Wall Street is, and the banks are highly regulated, and something new comes in, and it has the ability to potentially take out the middleman and take out the oversight. And so you and I, over the blockchain, can directly transfer value to each other without permission from a regulator and without permission from a third party. I think that scares the daylights out of people, and particularly older school traditional people. But this is a technology that's here. And what I've generally found in my life, when something is better, when a horseless carriage comes in and it's actually better than the horse and carriage, even if the old guard doesn't like it, it ends up getting adopted. And so we'll be trading with each other, back and forth with each other, permissionless. We'll be tokenizing parts of the world, whether the regulators or old Wall Street or banks like it or not. I saw that in 2020. I made these investments. I looked like a genius in 2021. I looked like a dunce in 2022. But I said to my clients, and I'll say to your viewers, if you take a five-year view of something like Bitcoin, I think you'll do very, very well. You know, we bought our Bitcoin at 17,000. It's trading at 90,000 plus right now. And I think this has a chance to go way higher over the next 5 years. But you have to have a stomach for this because it's new technology. What do we know about new technology? The old guard fights it. I'll just speak specifically about Uber. There wasn't one government official, one regulator, one taxi cab commission that wanted Google to exist in the United States. But you know who wanted Google? The American people. And so we're still in a democracy, and we're still in a place where the people have a voice and the people beat out the regulators. And that's what's happening with crypto.
Except this is more important than taxis. There's a reason why Karl Marx called it capital. This is so transformational. I mean, just one angle to this, the United States has weaponized sanctions against so much of the world. Clearly BRICS and the conference recently in Kazan, people are ignoring it now and finding new ways of trading and so on. Will an embrace of crypto by the Fed mean that sanctions no longer are a weapon because people will start to use crypto rather than the dollar, which they actually ironically used to evade sanctions previously with?
I'm not in the American government, but I've never been a big fan of these sanctions. I don't think the sanctions, you know, they could have hurt the Iranian government. They may have marginally hurt the Russian economy, but I think in general, they hurt the standing of the U.S. dollar. I think someone 50 years from now, an economic historian will look back and say the weaponization of the U.S. dollar is probably not necessarily helping the United States if the United States wants to maintain its mantle of financial services leadership and wants to maintain the U.S. dollar as a global reserve
currency. Why are you being so measured about it? I mean, it's destroyed it, doesn't it? I mean, in this region here, everyone's talking about de-dollarized trade.
Well, I'm being measured about it because if you look at the data, the dollar's actually gotten stronger since Trump got elected. Most assets in the world are dollar denominated. So I'm being measured about it. Yeah, on the margin, what you're saying is absolutely right. These decisions that have been made to implicate or to oppose sanctions have caused a lot of behavioral changes that I don't think is beneficial to the United States. But by and large, if you step back and look at it from 30,000 feet, the United States still has dollar supremacy, and most assets, like it or not, are still dollar denominated. Now, if you're telling me a BRIC meeting in 2035, the mix of things will be different, it's possible, but it may not be. You know, you could be in a situation where, you know, I never understood the, I don't know, I probably shouldn't say this on television, but I'll say it. I've never really understood the antagonism between the Russians and the Americans. They always seem to me like they could be natural allies. And so I don't know why we're going after each other like that, but is it possible 10 or 15 years from now, there could be a better understanding among those two nations? It's possible. And if it is, it'll be quite transformative for the world.
Just finally, I don't know whether you're going to make up with Trump, but I know you keep talking about weaponizing against his opponents. Actually, journalists are arguably feeling a sigh of relief because the First Amendment was under so much threat under Democrat regimes, Julian Assange case, Snowden, Manning, all under Obama, and obviously under Elon Musk. There's been a huge degree of freedom.
I'm not fearful.
Do you think it's better?
You got MSNBC hosts running down to Mar-a-Lago because they're fearful. I'm not fearful. I've spoken my piece. You know when Trump went out. Look, you live in the Arab world. Okay, I gave Trump millions of dollars, hundreds of hours of media advocacy. We got into a disagreement. It's okay to attack me, but he went after my wife. Who the hell does that? You know, I mean, who does that? And do I look like Ted Cruz to you? I'm not going to take that from Donald Trump. Remember, these people still work for us. It's very, very different in the Arab world. It's very different in Eastern Europe. But these people are serving the American people. He's not the ruler of America. He's in a public servant position. Don't go after my wife. I'm a public figure. Don't go after civilians. It's very distasteful. So
if you get an apology for that, you'd serve in his administration then.
Well, I definitely would need an apology for that, 100%. I would need an apology for that. And if he doesn't give me an apology for that, which he won't do because that's not his nature, that's fine. But you don't put out what I put out for Donald Trump on his transition team, staff, treasury, hundreds of hours of media advocacy, millions upon millions of dollars raised, millions of dollars given from my personal checking account, and then have him attack your wife and then say, oh, that's great. Ruff, ruff. I'm going to be a lapdog for Donald Trump. You don't do that in this country. That's not the neighborhood I grew up in the United States. We don't do that. I mean, if Ted Cruz wants to do that, God bless him. Okay, but that's not me. I would never do that.
Tony Scaramucci, thank you.
Good to be here, man. Be well.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US-EU armed genocide here in the Middle East. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.